Hello, everyone. I'm Brianna Graham, and this is QU, a student podcast on the QU Media Podcast Network. We are in Studio Q at North Campus today, April 10th, 2025. On today's show, my guest is Alana Edgecombe, and we are going to talk about a commission piece she had done for her junior recital. Would you like to introduce yourself, Alana?
Sure, Brianna. Like you said, my name is Alana Edgecombe. I am a junior music performance major here at QU from the Camp Point area.
Wonderful. Thank you for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So, would you like to introduce your commission song?
Sure. So, it was written by Carson. He's a senior composition major out at Truman State University. And the title of it is All That Remains.
And what's the song like? Because I don't have an audio of it. Can you try describing it for our audio listeners?
Kind of the general gist of it. It's a lot of, like, building anticipation. You know, it's designed to keep you on the edge of your seat. You know, it's kind of dark, gloomy, but with a lot of movement to it.
Interesting. And what was the process like having it made?
Honestly, it was a pretty fun process. We reached out to a few different places, and Carson was, he was definitely the most excited for it. It started with us just trying to get a general feel of each other, and then we moved to, you know, I was sending him bits and pieces of songs that I liked, songs that I liked the vibe of, and he was sending me back just random snippets of, okay, so how does this sound? And it was a lot of back and forth like that.
And why exactly did you get this opportunity for a commission piece? Because it sounds like a really big thing.
It really is a big thing. Not only for me as a performer, I mean, that's kind of the height of being a performer, is being able to commission your own works for you. But also for him, because he is a senior, so it's great for him to get a feel of what that process is like, what it can be like. It's kind of a step forward for him. But really, it just started from, you know, there's, saxophone's one of the newest instruments, so there's not a lot of repertoire or music for designed specifically for it yet, and there really isn't any music that has that type of vibe. I've always been more of a dark and mysterious type of music listener, you know, and so it was just great to be able to reach out, get something designed specifically how I wanted it, to get the vibe that I wanted, and it also helped him to, you know, broaden his horizons, figure out what, you know, what it would take to make that happen. And it definitely helps that I was planning on using this as the basis for the academic symposium. So that was definitely a fun little push. So,
and what's an academic symposium?
So the academic symposium is something that QU hosts at the end of every year, and it's kind of just a great way for students to present what they've been learning. So you'll have, you know, biology, sports management, they'll give presentations. Sometimes it's just they set up a display and then they walk around and view it. But yeah, so it's just a, so it's people from every major, they have a, I guess, kind of like a coach or sponsor. So, like, mine's Christine, or Dr. Dom, from the music department. And we'll just go up there, we'll give a presentation on it. Because of the nature of my presentation, I'm also going to be playing on it. And then at the end of the week, they go through and they have, like, almost like a recognition ceremony. They go through and they tell you what place you got within your major and so on and so forth.
Interesting. And are you playing this commission piece, or are you doing, like, another one similar to it?
No, I will be playing this commissioned piece. Yep.
I get to hear it again.
Yes.
That's exciting. I was also just going to ask, like, what was it like emotionally or, like, mentally? I know you kind of already touched upon this, but just to have this chance at, like, I think it's your first commission piece. It's made specifically for you, and you had the chance, you know, kind of work on it a little hands-on.
Yeah, so, for sure. The first time, honestly, I was really excited when we started talking about it and, like, realizing that it was actually going to happen. It was really exciting. But then as I started to receive the little snippets of he's being like, okay, well, this is what I have so far. Is this all right? You know, every time I heard it, I got more excited. You know, it was like my heart lifted. You know, I'm like getting a little jittery. You know, I'm like, oh, this is so cool. And then he sent me the final project, and it was just like everything I had wanted, you know, and it was so awesome. And then we printed off the sheet music for it. That way I could start practicing. And he had put on the top of the paper, commissioned by Alana Edgecombe. And that was a moment of, like, such pride. I'm like, my name's on that.
That makes it sound so official.
Yes, it really did. I love that. Yes.
Did it change a lot from, like, the beginning of working on it?
So there were a few changes. We definitely added in a few musical differences. Musical interpretation is a huge part of writing a song. That way it's not just notes on a page. But really the biggest changes came in the piano part. So he kind of tweaked the piano part. He added, like, it's kind of like, so there's almost multiple sections to the piece, even though it's only like a 4 minute long piece, where the style changes. And that was one of the things that he added, was he went through and he added, like, snippets of just piano to kind of transition into the other sections. So really that was the biggest change that got made.
And who was playing the piano at your recital? I forget her name.
It was Laura Kramer, I think is how you say her last name.
Big shout out to her because she also did really good.
Oh, she always does. She's absolutely amazing. She helps with all the choirs here on campus, all the recitals here on campus. She's also, she plays the organ at her church on the weekends. She helps, I think, Quincy Notre Dame, their choir. She accompanies them. Yeah, she's a busy, busy lady, but she still does an amazing job for everyone, so.
Oh, awesome. You guys played so good together. Thank you. I'm now really excited to hear it again.
Yes.
So I think I do want to give another shout out to Carson for doing that, just because he said that he also had, like, other stuff going on at school at the time, and he still, like, sounded like he worked really hard.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Composing is definitely not easy by any means. I had to take a composing class, and much respect for him, I could not do it to save my life. So it really was just great that, you know, it turned out so well, you know, and he's getting ready to have a senior recital this weekend where all the pieces he's composed are going to be played. And I think he's composed like 8 or 9 pieces this year. So, yeah, there would be periods of time where, you know, I wouldn't hear anything from him for a couple weeks. And he'd respond just like, hey, sorry, it's been kind of crazy. And so seeing that recital list, I'm like, yeah, I can see why it's been a little crazy for you.
So he looked very happy at your junior recital.
Oh, yeah, that part was definitely kind of stressful, having him there playing, because it's his baby, you know? Like, he put a lot of time into that, so it's kind of stressful to be like, well, I hope I live up to his expectations, you know? And he really did seem to enjoy it, and that was such a relief.
Okay, I had no doubts you were going to do good. I know you are a stellar player.
Well, thank you.
Musician.
Thank you.
So is there anything else you want to talk about with that commission piece?
Not really. I mean, other than just reiterating, you know, how awesome it was, because it is, you know, with most careers, there is like a pinnacle of the career, you know, and with music, there isn't really one because every performance, you know, you may take, you know, weeks and months to, you know, work up to this performance and then it's done and then it's just getting on to the next one. You know, every performance is a new thing. So really there is no such thing as one best moment. But getting to commission a work really, it may genuinely be that one best moment because you get to create something. You know, you get to bring this idea to life, and that's, it really was something special.
Does it make it feel more special since it happened in your college career?
Honestly, it does, because a lot of times when you hear about people that have commissioned works, they're, you know, well-known people like the Prism Quartet, or there's a Dr. Deborah Rickmeyer. She gets a lot of commissioned works, but, you know, she's the president of the North American Saxophone Association. So, you know, these are very established people that, you know, are amazing in the field that are getting pieces commissioned for them, you know? So to have that as a junior in college, it really is, it's amazing.
It sounded just, I'm very happy for you. Thank you. I really am. Is your senior recital going to be anything similar? Or how's that looking?
So the senior recital is going to be more standardized repertoire. So things that, you know, most grad schools are going to expect you to play. There is going to be, though, I purchased a C Melody not that long ago. It's a special type of saxophone that actually, it was only made for like 15 years, 100 years ago. I managed to get my hands on one, and as we're fixing it up, I'm actually looking at pieces to play on it for my senior recital. So there is going to be another unique feature to it.
That's exciting. And what's the difference between that and that instrument and what you are currently playing now?
So I'm currently on an alto saxophone, which that's kind of your standardized. If you go to a basic junior high performance, that's what you're going to see the students playing. If you go to a jazz band, you're probably going to hear the tenor saxophone, which is, you know, lower than your alto. It's a little bigger. The C Melody is actually, it's really unique. It's in between the two of them. And to talk with some, like, musical jargon, the C Melody is actually in a different key than both the alto and the tenor. The tenor reads music like a clarinet. The alto, it reads music like an alto. There's really nothing else in E-flat. But the C Melody was actually designed so you could play it in parlors along with a piano. So not only does it have a really unique sound, it's kind of like muffled and it just sounds kind of old. But it also reads the same type of music in the same key as a piano or a flute or stuff like that.
So when you do find music to play, are you also going to aim for like that, like dark, gloomy? Because it kind of sounds like that's like the type of music that it's kind of designed for.
So it's actually, if you think about, you know, those old black and white movies, think about, you know, almost, I kind of imagine like a Scooby-Doo scene where they're all like chasing each other. That's kind of the music that you hear. It's the, like, a little more upbeat, you know. It's the parlor music. You're going to hear it playing in the background of, you know, like a barber shop. Or another big thing for it is actually if you want to sing hymns at home with your family, you could play the piano part on the C Melody. So that's another option for it. But I may have something up my sleeve to make it, a little more my style.
That's exciting. Yes. It's very exciting. Yeah. When you said muffled, I was thinking like, kind of like inside the house when like there's rain petering down on like the ceiling and all that, or roof.
Yeah. No, it's kind of, I don't know. It's the saxophone that you would pull out if you wanted to play for your grandma, you know? Because anything else, she's like, oh, that's too loud. But the C melody, especially if you can get your hands on a C melody saxophone, it sounds way more like, you know, it really is something that you could play for your grandma.
Is that the one you showed me that one day? I know that is so vague, but like, is that the one you showed me in your car one day?
Yes. It's a silver, actually. Right, yeah. I got an obsession with silver saxophones, and then I realized that the C melody was a thing, and I'm like, wait a minute, you mean to tell me I can get a silver C melody? Oh, I was so excited. I skipped away from picking that saxophone up.
And where did you find it at?
It was actually, so there used to be a business here in town called Quincy School of Music. And unfortunately, the owner was no longer in a place where he could run the store. So his daughter went through and auctioned off all of his inventory. And, you know, his was one of the buildings where you would walk in and you kind of had to tiptoe to find the walkway, you know, because like that building was full of just random instrument supplies, music. So that's, I had gotten on to the online auction and I saw it on there.
I see. Okay. I feel like you definitely told me that before. You definitely have.
Probably.
But that's fun. And is that the same case that you were gonna like refurbish? Because I remember you were sending me pictures of like,
yeah, so I did get it refurbished, because since the C Melody is such an old saxophone, you know, obviously the cases match. It was an original case, so it just had a couple random bits of wood in there to keep it, like, stabilized with heavy air quotes. It wasn't a secure case. Now, you know, we know more about keeping the instruments safe inside the cases and how important it is that it's not moving around at all. So I went through, and the case was old. It stunk. so I went through and I ripped out all the old stuff from inside of it, and I refurbished the inside.
You did a really good job when you showed me those pictures.
Thank you.
Like, that looked like a professional did it.
Yeah, I've definitely gotten a few compliments on it from people that, you know, are comfortable with cases. So that's another moment of achievement for me.
And what was that? Was it a C Melody?
C Melody, yep.
C Melody. Are you playing that during your senior recital?
Yes. Yep. Okay.
Fun. You kind of look like you wanted to keep that a little bit of a secret, whatever you were planning on doing with it. So we won't go too far into that.
It's not like a huge secret. Like, I mean, people know that I want to play it on my recital, but I don't know. There was a performer back in the like 30s or 40s that was really known for his C melody songs, and so I plan on playing one of his pieces. And I'm just really excited for it. Like,
yeah, talking about saxophones. Really random question, but when I was watching you at your junior recital, I noticed that whenever you would play, you would kind of, like, shake. Not, like, shake the instrument, but you kind of, like, wave it a little bit. Do you notice your Nana? Is there a reason why you would, like, kind of move it around while you play?
So, honestly, I don't remember doing that. It may be partially... Ooh, I think I may know what you're talking about. So... part of the issue with playing a solo with accompaniment is it's just you and the pianist. So if you're in the concert band or the marching band, you have a conductor up there, you know, waving their arms to keep you guys together. When you're playing a solo, you don't have that. And I'm not someone who dances a whole lot. There's some people that dance, you know, really grandly when they play.
Say his name. The pink-haired guy, say his name.
His name is the Candyman. No, his name's Leo P. He actually dances. Yep. I'm not even talking, like, not even people that are going to be doing full break dancing while playing like he does. But people will move around, do full body movements. because it's them feeling the beat, feeling the music, and it allows the accompaniment to follow them. I'm not someone who does that, so a lot of times I will give, I will move my saxophone, because what that does is it allows the pianist to see where I'm at in the counting, you know, because they're looking at two lines of music, so really they could be looking at four lines of music, and then they're also having to look at your solo line so that they can see where you're at, and, you know, that's a lot to do, so you kind of, you make it a little easier on them by moving, so that's what that was.
I did not know that. There's some good, like, behind-the-scenes look. I did not know that there's, it sounds like there's a bazillion different things going on. Shout out to you guys, my God.
Yeah. Now, you will see, like, there's a couple trumpet recitals going on. You know, there's one this week. I think one either next week or the following. And you'll see a lot of times they will actually move their instrument, or, like, actually shake the instrument, and that's a whole nother effect that you can get from the instrument, because on saxophone we have a vibrato, but a lot of that's supposed to be done more with like your, the shaping of your mouth and throat, and but trumpet, they actually have what's called a shake, and they shake the trumpet and it gives them that kind of like wah 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 wah, wah sound. It's just a whole nother effect for them.
See, that's what I was kind of thinking what you were doing, but I don't know anything about a saxophone. So I wanted to, like, ask that. Because, like, I know it's, like you're kind of, like, not, it wasn't, like, swaying, but, like, it was what you were doing. Like, I was just really curious about what was going on.
Yeah, no, outside of just trying to get comfortable with, you know, that hanging from your neck, the biggest purpose of that is to help, you know, whatever accompanist you have with you stay with you, you know.
And have you guys, like, played together a lot before?
Yeah. So, actually, once I started here, Laura's been the only person that has played piano for me, like, since I started my QU career. And especially leading up to the recital, we practiced at least once a week for an entire month leading up to this on the music. And then, you know, the last week or two, we practiced two or three times a week. So, yeah, we definitely worked hard to get it put together.
And putting aside just, like, practicing at all, since you guys have, like, kind of, like, worked together since, what, it's been, like, 3 years?
Yeah.
Do you think that's, like, helped at all with, like, your recitals and all that?
Honestly, I think it does. Because every performer has their own style, you know, and it's easier for her to, it's kind of like if you put a conductor up in front of a band, every conductor has different patterns and styles, and, you know, if you're just joining in on a band for one day, you may have no clue what that conductor is doing. But everyone else around you will, because they're comfortable with it. If you just try to, you know, sight read through music accompanying someone, you may not be able to follow them. Or me as a saxophone player, I may not be able to follow her. I may not trust her to follow me, you know. And being comfortable with her as an accompanist, it really, it helps you build trust, so you know that, you know, she can follow you. You know that you can merge with her, you know, because that's kind of the goal, is one sound, you know. So it just, it really helps with all of that.
That's interesting, because I think it's just, like, from, like, an outsider, it's just very easy to assume, like, okay, you guys are just playing your music from your sheet. And, like, you wouldn't think about, like, what's going on through, like the relationship sort of built between the people playing and all that.
Oh, yeah, no, it's, performing is a lot more than just reading notes on a page. Practicing is just reading notes on a page. Performing is bringing those notes to life. It's kind of like painting. You know, you may go through and you can look at it like, oh, I'm just putting paint on a page. Or you can look at it like, I'm creating a piece of art.
Is that what you think whenever you go out on stage?
Yes. You know, your hope is that you can paint an image for for whoever's listening that you can, that they can hear and see whatever you're feeling. You know, if that's, you know, they can hear the waves of the sound, you know, or okay. I mean, they have songs specifically for that where they're descriptive titles. So, like, Vivaldi's Four Springs, you know, you're supposed to, fairly positive, Four Springs, Four Seasons? Four Seasons, I think. But, you know, it's, you're supposed to be able to imagine whatever's going on. So if he's, you know, he may put a whole bunch of notes on the page, but to the people out in the audience, it's supposed to sound like, you know, rain's coming in. Okay, now that the rain's in, here's the thunder. You know, now it's storming. Wait, the storm's over, you know, and now it's peaceful. You know, you're supposed to be able to, as a performer, you're supposed to be able to help the audience get to that point of, like, recognition.
Kind of like storytelling, but without any words.
Yes,
which is
exactly.
Very interesting.
Yes.
So you mentioned style and then how each performer has, like, their own style. Mm. Do you have a style? Can you recognize it at all?
So I'm still growing. I mean, really everyone's still growing. There is no such thing as one best performer. There's something new to learn every day. But I'm definitely still growing. I will say, I feel like my playing does lend itself more to the more mysterious. I don't know. In my personal opinion, it just sounds, my quiets tend to have better tones. It just tends to sound better when I'm playing the slower, more melodic. It lends itself pretty well towards the minor music, you know.
Is that pretty familiar to, like, the song that you had commissioned? Because you didn't get, like, a voice and, like, what you wanted it to sound like, obviously.
Yeah, so I definitely wanted that. I don't know if you've watched Harry Potter, but, you know, the Toil and Trouble?
What song is that a song?
Yes. It might have been Prisoner of Azkaban when they came in from, or maybe it was the Goblet of Fire. They came back to start the school year, and they had the Hogwarts choir up on stage singing the song. That's the song, Toil and Trouble was the name of it. And it's that, like, ominous, there's a sense of urgency to it. I think it's just because I'm less articulate in my playing, slightly less technical. I definitely have a more musical style, and so it almost feels easier for me to create the imagery than it is for me to stand up there and just play something so fast and technical that there is no image, you know?
Right. And so will you take, like, obviously you're still growing and, you know, you could change and all that over your course of learning and just your whole career in general. But will you take this, like, style with you into, like, are you going to graduate school?
I am.
So, yes. Like, will you be taking that with you, or, like, how exactly is that going to work? Like, are you going to, like, focus on that area, I suppose, is the question I'm trying to ask?
No, so grad school is, I mean, I'm definitely never going to let it go. You know, that style is always going to be a part of me. But it's up there with, like, you know, you may focus on jazz. And if you're focusing on jazz, then you may focus just on the swing, you know, like the swing style. You can't really do that as much when you're just playing your classical saxophone music. But grad school is really all about, it's helping to build, like, whatever. It's helping expose you and just make you, like, to different styles, make you a better player, you know? And so by the time you walk out of grad school, you should be able to choose whatever style you want. You know, so their goal is really just to put you in a place where you can have whatever style you want. And then from there, it's just kind of your responsibility to make it happen.
So graduate school is still like a safe place where you can kind of like grow, expand, experiment a little bit with your style before you're released out into the world.
Yes. An interesting way to look at it, because like obviously there's undergrad where they're still helping you learn. Like that's when you start really hammering hard, making sure that your fundamentals are still right. And then you go to grad school, and especially for your master's, they're still working on that, but their goal is, you know, fix whatever wasn't fixed in undergrad. But then you move on to, you know, working towards, okay, this is how we be more musical in the music. Doesn't matter what style you're playing, this is how we be more musical in it. And then you go to, like, if I want to get my DMA, you know, I'll go there, and all of a sudden, it's not the professor's teaching you things, it's the professor helping you experiment. You know, the entire goal of DMA is, you know, they're hoping that you leave their program better than them.
And what does DMA stand for?
It'd be, Doctor of Musical Arts.
Okay.
It's the degree.
Are you going to shoot for that?
I think so. Because while I would love to join a military band, I want to have options after I leave. And if you have your doctorate in the performing arts, I mean, the doors are kind of wide open for you. You can teach, you know, if you want to teach high schoolers, you can. I don't, but you can teach, you know, if you want to go teach as a professor somewhere, you can do that. If you want to be in an orchestra somewhere, you know, it's kind of having those credentials, it does help. And not only that, but it also, like I said, you're never done learning, but it's a lot easier to learn from someone who's already started. You know, if they've already figured out the extended techniques, it's easier to learn from them and then be like, okay, well, here's this extended technique. Here's how I figured it out, so that you're not just starting from square one, you know?
Right. Do you have any sort of idea or plan for, like, I guess after your doctorate? You talked about teaching. You talked about playing in, like, a larger.
So my goal really is going to be to join a military band. Specifically either Marine or Army. And ideally, I could stay in that until I retired from the military. And then from there, it'll just be kind of where it takes me, you know? I may teach lessons. I may, you know, like you mentioned earlier, I was refurbishing that saxophone case. I may do a lot of refurbishing saxophone cases. I may just work as, like, an adjunct professor somewhere, you know.
Right, so there's definitely no rush whatsoever to get that figured out, but sounds like you do have at least a good idea, which never hurt.
I try to keep my options open.
I do want to say one more thing before we switch topics here. If you ever have a chance to listen to a jazz recital, or like that sort of instrument recital, please do it, because it did not sound like jazz, and it was really interesting because it wasn't what you would expect to come from like a saxophone. I walked in thinking, okay, it's gonna be like more jazzy. No, it was really, really good.
Thank you. Yeah, no, that was part of it, is I'm not a huge jazz performer, and so it is awesome to be able to expose people to that other, the other side. You know, you can be. Jazz, I feel like, is a lot of, like, in your face. And, you know, it's kind of showing that saxophone can be sensitive. It can be classical, you know, even modern. It can be strange, but still not jazz, you know?
You know what you need to do? You need to start, like, a social media page and post songs about you playing on that instrument, but not jazzy. And just, like, I don't know, have fun with it. Expose people.
I mean,
show what the instrument can do.
Yeah, it's definitely, if you look up, I mean, even Leo P, you know, he's not jazz per se, but he definitely performs in like a New Orleans style. And it is, it's it kind of blows your mind because you think of, you know, oh, someone playing that smooth jazz as background music, you know, or elevator music. And then you're exposed to someone, you know, like him, where it's just like, oh, so my possibilities really are endless. You know, like the only limit to it is the performer, you know.
So he is incredible, very energetic from what I remember. He's yes. a character, but we all love him for that.
Yes, he's a performer in all senses of the word.
Yes. And his name was Leo P.
Yes.
All right. Give him a look up if you're interested, because he really is cool. So I'm going to switch a little bit of topic here. I'm going to throw you a curveball of a question. Okay. It's way off topic. Okay. But so for each of these podcasts ran by my news class, we ask a question at the end of the podcast, and it's a favorite question. And my question is, before I actually ask the question, you and I are friends, and I know that we do, like, sort of hands-on hobbies.
Yes.
You know, we dabble in a little bit. So I was going to ask you, what is your favorite hands-on hobby that you have done?
Oh, boy. Honestly, I notice that I always go back to cross-stitch or puzzles. Those are definitely fun. But at the moment, my current favorite is actually... I'm making, like, matchstick models. So it's taking the, you know, the, like, wooden part of the matchstick, and you're cutting it up and gluing it together and making, like, an actual, like, I'm making a model train out of it.
Does that come with a kit, or are you just, like, doing that, like, on your own?
So I'm not cool enough to do it on my own. I definitely started with a kit, but it is something that, you know, you could do from, you know, like, you could do it DIY if you really wanted to. I say DIY, it's always DIY, but like you could come up with designs yourself and go from there.
You have to show me a picture when you get that done.
Yes.
That's cool though. I mean, excuse me, but as for my own, because what are you doing?
I'm laughing at you, it's fine.
That's mean. I mean, for my own, I've been really getting into those model kits. Like, I just got done with, like, that Transformer one, and I need to wait for Hobby Lobby to get a new set out, because I've already done the two that they have. And I'm really interested in getting to the Gundam sets. Is that how you pronounce it?
It's Gunpla.
Gunpla. Really interested in this.
It was Mobile Suit Gundam was the anime that it was based off of, so the actual sets themselves are Gunpla.
There's one set at Target, one box. I don't think we have any more, and it's so tempting just to go snatch it.
Do you know what, so, like, I don't know if the Transformer sets are the same, but I know Gunpla, it has different grades, so there's high grade, real grade, master grade. Do you know what grade it is?
I cannot tell you. I don't think I have a picture of it.
Okay, yeah, your high grade is, like, your standards. Your real grade are going to be a little more complex than that. And then once you start getting into, like, the master grade, that's when, like, your fingers start articulating. And, I mean, they're bigger and more expensive. But
honestly, I know I have seen that master grade at Hobby Lobby. It's that big box on the very top shelf.
That's, like, you know, $100.
Yes. It looked like it'd be so – I would love to do it. But it's like, man, I got to make sure I like doing these. But – I would really like to start, like, weathering the sets, making them look a little roughed up.
That would be pretty cool. Yeah, because, you know, in the movies, they're not perfect, you know?
Give them some character, show some story.
Some battle scars, yep. You know?
So is there anything else you want to talk about before we close this out?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, thank you to my guest, Alana Edgecombe, for being here. I really appreciate you. Thank you for listening to QU. I'm Brandon Graham, and this has been a production of the QU Media Podcast Network.